Can anyone hear me?
I can hear you.
I can hear you, Monique.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hello, everyone.
Hello. How are you, James?
Good evening.
I'm good. How's everyone doing today?
Hi, Mike. I'm fine.
All right. Well, it is a little past six. How about we get this party started, everybody?
Hi, James.
Hi. So we'll call the meeting to order. And I guess I'll start. My name's James Prout. I am the Quinton Heights Steel NIA president, and I'm also the chair of the CAC. And whoever wants to be next, go ahead and speak up, please.
Courtney Seaver for Chesney Park.
Teresa Miller from North Topeka West NIA.
Margot Rangel, City at Large.
Susan McClarty with Valley Park NIA.
Debbie Du Bois, Historic Old Town NIA.
Alicia Barber, Jefferson Square NIA.
Ivan Weikert, City at Large.
Do we have anyone else that needs to introduce themselves? Five, four, three, two, one. All right, on to our next order of business.
So how many people do we have? Do we have a quorum?
One moment, let me check. I've got...
Looks like 21 participants.
Of the 21 participants, though, do we have enough CAC members?
No, we do not. We can't vote on any decisions.
That is what I was worried about.
Yep.
What are we short?
James.
Okay. Two people come through at the same time.
Hi. This is Deborah with Historic North Topeka East NIA, and I'm present.
Okay. So we have two, three, Ivan makes four, Let's see. Margo makes 5. Who's on the Galaxy A fee? Who is coming up as Galaxy A50?
Did you get me Alicia Barber, Jefferson Square?
That's 6.
I think we have maybe about 8 or 9, and that's all we have. If you count the people at large, we have about 8 or 9.
Right. Okay. So with that, can we, LaToya, could you please pull up the agenda for tonight? I'm not able to find my copy of it for some reason.
The agenda is part of the presentation on screen.
So okay.
Go on to the next item if you're ready to.
Remember, you got people that do not see screens.
We can read it.
Thank yeah, you. I'll read it for everybody that's not visually able to do that. All right, so our next agenda is staff updates. And with that, I will turn it over to Monique.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in regards to the current CAC bylaws and the ordinance, I had the opportunity to speak with the city attorney last week to find out where the CAC was on the schedule. It seems that the CAC was not on the schedule to be up, the bylaws to be updated because nothing was submitted. So we were able to locate the last meeting, I believe it was in May of 2017, with some suggestions from the CAC, but there wasn't a quorum to be able to vote on those. So where we are right now is when the CAC is ready to provide a revision, you're more than welcome to do so. As soon as I receive that, I'll send it over to legal. They'll review it, give any feedback. Once you have approved what you want to be as the finalized revision, then we will get you on this calendar. I will be then making that request to get us on the calendar for you to be for to be approved at a city council meeting. So where we are now is at step one. You need to go back, revise them however you'd like to have them revised, and then we'll submit those to legal. So I wanted to make sure to share that with you so you could have a little bit more discussion for your November meeting.
Can we get a copy of those?
Sure. LaToya will send those out tomorrow.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. The next line item is the upcoming CAC chair and vice chair election. Please remember that's on November the 4th. And then please review the additional links below. And those that will be the Citizen Advisory Council Ordinance 18329 and those bylaws I was referring to. And so those are there, but LaToya will send those out to you tomorrow. So we'll have all of that.
Thank you.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I have a question about the bylaws. This is Susan McClarity. The question I have was, can I ask the question, James?
I don't have any problem with a few questions.
The question I have is, I know that they sent out the bylaws, but the other thing is the SEAC. Or we also have NIA bylaws, which usually is a template. So I would assume that in the process, we would need to be also looking at those and making sure that that template is in line with whatever we propose for the updates to the CAC. Would you agree with that?
Well, are you asking me the question, Susan?
Yeah. My
recommendation is that you would utilize the outline of the previous CAC bylaws. And if there's something that you want to change, you could make those necessary changes.
We have some for the NIA too, right? The NIAs have bylaws. There's a template that we use that usually is like a hand in glove with this one, I assume.
No.
Okay.
You would just take the current bylaws and then make whatever changes and revisions you'd like to make.
Okay, thank you.
You're most welcome.
Monique, I had a question about the ordinance.
Sure.
What prompted that to be on the agenda?
I can't speak on that. I'm not quite sure exactly what prompted it. James, did you have a discussion or a request? Or it may just be that we probably put that up there. My assumption, and Latoya, you can speak on this, is because we also were talking about the bylaws at the same time. So being able to look at both of those, I think would be able to provide everyone a little bit more substance so you could have a little bit more in-depth conversation.
I would agree. Just curious.
Sure. Great question. Latoya, yeah, or James?
I thought that it would be important for us to talk about the bylaws because last meeting mentions of bylaws and Robert's rules and some other things. And I truly believe that, you know, we have our next session next month. And my true belief is that whoever is chair and vice chair for the next year, in order to be more effective as a body and for us to be able to hold a little bit more sway, we really need to get our bylaws buttoned up and get everybody on the same page so that we're all doing and thinking along the same lines.
You're right. This is Teresa Miller. The reason why I'm one of them that brought that we need to look at the new bylaws, and the reason why they sit there is because someone was supposed to bring them up in front of city council and it never happened. In those bylaws, we argued for months over this, and one of the things, and the reason why we're doing it right now, because look how many people out of 20-some NIAs are doing nothing. We mentioned, scared the holy Hades out of them because they weren't showing up, that we would take some of their funding away from them if they wouldn't start showing up. And lo and behold, the next meeting, almost everybody was there because they didn't want to lose any funding. But I don't think that'll even scare them anymore. We've got to figure out a way to get these people in. It is an elective official from the NIA that is elected like an officer that is supposed to be coming to these meetings to represent their NIAs with the ideas that CAC does. And it's not happening. So keep that in mind when we look at these new bylaws. Thank you.
I just want to add to everyone also the CAC ordinance 18329 and the CAC council bylaws are also available on the Citizens Advisory Council webpage. And I have sent them out in previous emails, but as Monique mentioned, I will also send that out again. So that everybody has copies of those to review before the next meeting.
I do have a question. It's Teresa again. The ordinance 18329 is dated October 27, 2004, and the old bylaws are dated approximately the same year. So are these bylaws going clear back from 2004 are what we're using? And so that's the ones that we're using right now. That's what the ordinance is for.
That is correct.
Thank you.
I think it is important that both are discussed because yep. Ultimately it's the ordinance that defines what this group is and what it does
and what
and
it can
who it's
do.
Supposed to work for.
Yes.
Do we have any more questions, comments, or concerns?
No.
All right, then let's move on to our next agenda item. Who wants to speak about this City of Topeka legal statement?
That would be you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So at the last meeting, I had given you guys a little bit of information about something that Margo, Susan, and I were working on. And it was brought up that A couple of folks thought that we had violated the Open Meetings Act. Mm-hmm. And so the next morning, I contacted legal. I made them aware of the situation. One, because I told you guys I would, and two, because I wanted to make sure that I wasn't breaking any laws. And so this is legal's response, and I'll read it for the folks that are on the phone that can't hear it. It says, this is from Mary with the legal department. It says, Mr. Prout contacted me about the open meetings concern. He explained that three members of the CAC had discussed approaching Bill Fiander to discuss the benefit of purchasing certain, I'm cut off here. Hold on real quick. I got to move you guys' lovely faces. All right. He explained that three members of the CAC had discussed approaching Bill Fiander to discuss the benefit of purchasing certain software. Two of the CAC members accused Mr. Prout of violating the open meetings law. The Open Meetings Act prohibits a majority of a governing body from discussing business unless notice of the meeting is provided to those citizens who have requested notice of all CAC meetings. As three members of the CAC do not constitute a majority of the CAC governing body, there was no open meetings violation. I advised Mr. Prout that there was no violation and that he could share this information with the CAC. I don't see that there's need for an attorney at a CAC meeting. This email should suffice. Please feel free to share.
James, can we get each of us a copy of that so we can put it in our records so there won't be any more question about it?
I think that should be something that we can do.
Absolutely.
Is that correct?
Thank you.
I will forward a copy of the email to everyone tomorrow.
Thank you very much.
Does anybody have any questions, comments, or concerns about this?
Not at this time.
All right. Let's move on to the next thing then. All right. More stuff for me.
I attempt to show this video, but James, if you want to give an overview and then I'll hopefully it pops up the way it's supposed to.
An overview about the software, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So basically I'm in no way someone who professionally deals with software or anything like that. So I'm just giving my very abridged, super dumb take on this, okay? So this is not professional advice. So this software, to my understanding, is basically a software that helps keep track of projects. Now you can use that whether that needs to be like a street project or a sort project, or even if you just want to have an event in your NIA. It helps track the progress. It helps with accountability. And it's supposed to be able to give some time frame as well. So if you put in, the CAC is going to do an event at the zoo. I'm just going to use that because that's something that we've done. It'll tell us, hey, you need to have where you're going to have it by this time. You need to have your volunteers organized by this time. You need to be able to have all of your door prizes or whatever secured by this time. And then whoever's in charge of filling that out information out goes ahead and fills it out. And then it's accessible to anybody who has permissions for it. So then the next year, if somebody else in the CAC is trying to do an event, they can go back and look at it and say, James did this event. This is how many people he had at the event. This is how many volunteers he had at the event. This is the money that was spent at the event for door prizes or whatever. And if there's a questionnaire for the citizens that attend it, You should be able to post the results of the questionnaire on there as well. Now on the bigger scale of things, doing it with city projects, you can input what contractor was contracted, what type of material they used, life expectancy. You can even put in stuff for like how long the roads in like are other good, better, best condition or whatever. So really it's tracking software that really kind of helps hold everybody's feet to the fire. It keeps everybody accountable from the city to the contractors all the way down to the citizens. So that's my super dumb version of that.
Thank you, James. Did I get cut off?
I just Hello? Heard somebody speak. I heard somebody
I can still hear you.
Okay, thank you.
I take it the video's not going to work.
There it is.
Oh, here we go.
Are we videoing?
There's no volume on the video. It is the it's a video from the software
okay, maker. Thank you.
And there's still no sound to the video.
Can you, if you still have trouble with that, can you send that as an attachment to everybody so they can open it at home and watch it?
The excerpts from this session, where different speakers will describe some of the ways that their organizations or programs can support.
I think you had it.
Maybe.
Can you hear it now?
We did.
No, we had some for a little bit.
Okay. I figured out what the problem is, and I will go ahead and play it.
Thank you.
These objectives. I'm going to use the strategy map to visually show how these different components can fit together in a larger strategy. In this case, to increase successful first-time home ownership. That's the outcome. One of the strategies is to increase training in personal financial management for people who might become homeowners. And that can be enhanced with apps and tools that support the motivation while providing training. And those can be provided and often paid for by a supportive mortgage company that might bring its own tools designed to help those first-time potential homeowners. We'll then see how the opportunity for home ownership can be enhanced with tools and programs to enhance credit scores. The success of first-time home buyers can also be increased if you have real estate professionals that are specifically focused on helping them and bringing in things like down payment assistance programs or programs designed to help strengthen the social norms for home ownership. And then further enhanced by a mortgage reserve program so people are less likely to default once they have a mortgage. So let's take a look at some of the different programs that were featured in this session.
So we have we have around 1,800 sales individuals across the country. And of those 1,800, so many of them pour back into the local communities, not by just serving through helping individuals get into homes, but they also are volunteering. They also are raising funds. For different organizations. And when they do so in those local communities, the foundation will stand beside them, help dollar for dollar any of the funds that they raise for those local community and organizations as well as if anybody, anyone in the actual company, and I specifically talk about sales because they're actually out in the field, but anyone in the company, if anyone in the company donates money or anyone in the company volunteers hours, the foundation stands beside and does the exact same, right? We'll dollar for dollar, anything that our individuals in our company will do. It's also important that we created an education platform called Master Your Money, which focuses on the foundational financial items and information, saving, budgeting, understanding your credit, how to prime your credit if you were to step into home ownership, and how to prepare for that journey. And not only prepare for the journey, but once you actually get into a home, what's next? How can we prepare you and help you stay in that home? Mm-hmm. Underneath all of that, we are having partnerships and creating partnerships with affordable housing units so we can help are in different LMI buckets, getting to long-term housing and homeownership.
So that gave us an example of how a supportive mortgage company can help promote increasing successful first-time homeownership, and also how they can support training in personal financial management. Next, we'll look at how another company can add to that with apps and tools to support savings, motivation, and training.
So what we do is we take an approach where you can actually start to save for a home by connecting bank accounts to our platform. And as you're working kind of closer and closer to your ultimate goal of building it up for a down payment, we are feeding you information in these milestones that teach you about the process. And these milestones get sent to you via email or push notifications as you like reach certain milestones that actually are specifically tied to the dollar value that you will ultimately be spending on this. So, for instance, when you save your first $500 in our product, you get an email saying, congratulations, you saved enough for a home appraisal. Here's what it is. Here's why you need it. And at that point in time, not only have you saved enough, but you've also now learned and become more financially literate on what's needed for actually buying a home. So that's really what makes our product unique.
Next, we'll hear some excerpts of the talk by Wamimo Abbey, one of the co-founders of Isuzu Rents, talking about programs and tools to enhance credit scores.
We started Isuzu with a simple premise. Your financial identity shouldn't determine where you end up in life.
We work with large multifamily owners and operators to capture rental payment data and report it into the credit bureaus to help tenants build and establish their credit scores. There's currently 45 million Americans that don't have a credit score today. We can unlock over $3 trillion in mortgages. That in and of itself is not only good for the American economy, it's good for advancing and paving a permanent bridge to financial access and inclusion for everyone. Our loan provider can look at someone and be like, wow, this person has rented their home for 20 years. I bet they're a really good bet for this mortgage product.
Access to housing is a basic human right. We need to collectively think about how we make sure it is accessible to everyone.
The overall strategy can be strengthened by adding down payment assistance programs and also mortgage reserve programs, such as the one described by Pamela Agaba in this segment.
When we talk about home ownership preservation, we really want to focus on households' abilities to build savings in case of a loss of income. We came up with the Home Reserve Mortgage Match Savings Account. And the premise of this account is to use savings to obtain and maintain home ownership for low-income households. Let's talk about how. So, after that pilot, we developed a full-fledged plan that we've called Home Reserve, a mortgage match savings initiative. The primary goal of Home Reserve is to reduce default in low to moderate income homeowners through increasing their savings by incentivizing repetitive long-term savings habits post-purchase.
What is the opportunity to either expand it or just copy it? And how are you looking to scale it up?
Great question. So there are several options. The first being If they have funding available, we can definitely partner with them. Prosperity Now is the creator of this program, and we have actually several iterations that we've done as we've built out these two major pilots, but we've also considered several other options that could work, particularly if your organization is a CDFI who does direct mortgage lending. And so we'll be able to provide research and resources that, one, prove that savings is a major preventative aspect of default, and two, that through incentivizing savings, you're able to help low to moderate income households build their immediate savings for emergencies, but as I mentioned before, also access long-term savings tools that they previously hadn't been able to access.
The rest of this session looked at ways of supporting home maintenance and home improvements, which is part of successful home ownership, such as leveraging a time exchange program or a tool library in training. The session then looked at how home improvements could be made more cost-effective with bulk purchasing of materials and gave examples of how communities could work together to help improve the value of the homes, including taking advantage of energy efficiency upgrade programs, which could be targeted to support first-time homeowners. Lastly, we mentioned the value of having grants and financing for home improvements, again, to support first-time homeowners. And lastly, we briefly mentioned the opportunity to support home ownership with a variety of ways of helping new homeowners add accessory dwelling units additional source of income to help them pay for their homes. And that's covered more in detail in many of the other sessions. This session also got some great comments, such as very impactful, or this session was helpful. Thank you. And thank you to all the presenters for the wonderful work you're doing. And this session is awesome. Shows the creativity that is out there and provides insights into how these strategies could be imported into very many communities.
Does anybody have any questions, comments, or concerns about that?
Well, I did have a question, James. What are HCCI and the other local housing providers doing with, currently regarding what was discussed in the video? Did you hear me? I'm sorry.
Something happened there. There seemed to be music, and then there was beeping.
I don't know what that was. That hurt.
Yeah. Michael, could you repeat that question? I'm sorry.
Sure, no problem. I just wondered what HCCI and some of the other local housing providers were doing in the areas that were discussed in the presentation.
Question. Hopefully, maybe Mr. Fiander can answer some of that.
And yeah, maybe that's something we'll need to research and get back with people. And that's cool too.
Michael, this is Corey with Housing Services. And the one thing I do know that's happening, and I don't know everything about HCCI, but I do know that they have down payment assistance for first-time home buyers that we kind of coordinate with our TOTO program. And so they get down payment assistance, and that I believe is through the Federal Home Loan Bank grant that they receive. As the city receives it for a different purpose, they receive it for down payment assistance. So they do that with our TOTO program, and then we put some rehab money in to finish off the TOTO project. So I know that's happening, but I'm not for sure of other activities that HCCI might have.
Okay.
I'm totally lost. This is Teresa Miller. First of all, I thought we were talking about a software program that was going to help all NIAs keep track of their progress and what they do. All I'm hearing is about homeowners, first-time homeowners, and has to do with housing, and that's all. So I'm confused.
Sure. So the video that we just watched was from a conference on affordable housing that the people who make the software put on. Okay. So I understand why you're confused by that. I believe there was a link that was sent out to everyone in the CAC that had the meeting that Margo, Susan, and myself attended with that gentleman, where we actually got to ask him some questions and he kind of ran through things with us. It was about an hour long, maybe an hour and 10 minutes long. If anybody doesn't have that, we can try to send that back out again.
Okay. I just don't remember.
Yeah, because I want to make sure that everybody gets the same information that I had on it, and that Susan had on it, and that Margo had on it. And honestly, Susan would probably be the one to better explain everything. She's done a ton of research on that, a lot more than what I've done. So,
I mean, it just sounds like it would benefit a landlord or a homeowner more than us. That's what it's all. It didn't explain itself like what you said, how we would build on our own. It sounds like they're totally involved with it. They will help and match money and all this craziness. So I was totally lost. And it sounds like you have to be in the buying of homes or being a landlord for this software to work for you.
Yeah, no, that was just excerpts from a conference that was specifically about how different companies can help people purchase homes that are low LMI, that are low to moderate income. It was a conference specifically about affordable housing, and the nuts and bolts of the software were in no way, shape, or form discussed in that 10-minute presentation.
Okay.
But it did have some good ideas.
Yeah.
Right.
Thank you.
So with that, does anybody else have any questions, comments, or concerns about anything else that we've gone over?
No.
James?
Yes?
This is Deborah, and I have a question. Is this a software that you're thinking about investing in for the CAC and NIA members to use?
This would be a software that would have to be probably implemented at the city level, and they have multiple different access points for it. So there could potentially be a city employee access point, a CAC access point, and an NIA access point, along with other access points from like nonprofits and whatnot. So then that way everybody's seeing all the same information.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Can you tell me again, I'm sure you told me before, how much is this program supposed to cost?
So we, I did ask that question in the meeting, and they said there's a couple of different options. One option is to lease or rent. The other option is to outright buy the software. And I said, well, I mean, what if we have, you know, 50 to 100 users? And he said at 100 users with 100, basically 100 portals to where 100 different people could access it at different levels, it would cost around $100,000. It is not cheap software by any means.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Here's my question, though, before we spend so much time on this. Can our city afford it at this time? I really don't think we can, because we're letting people go and livelihoods are being destroyed because we have to let them go. So I don't see us going out and buying something big piece of software like this when we can't keep the city afloat, if you understand what I'm trying to say.
I do understand that brings up financial concerns, And when we initially started looking at this, you know, when they give you software presentations, they don't tell you about price.
Not until after you walk. Yeah, I understand.
So it was one of those, things where, you know, Susan did some research on it and then brought it to Margaret and I's attention. And we were like, well, yeah, let's see what it does. You know, let's
and we don't have enough for a quorum, but I think when we do, I think we need to table this. I think it's too expensive for our city at this time. Maybe in the near future would be great, but I don't want to put this expenditure on our city.
That's a fair point. However, I don't know if we will have any say in it one way or the other. I think that
we always have a say. Trust me, we'll figure it out. Thank you.
All right, we're going to move on to Bill, and I would like to send out a friendly reminder that if you're not speaking, could you please mute it, because it does mess up the audio from other people.
Okay. Thanks, James. Appreciate sharing part of your agenda with me tonight. I am going to give you a overview, kind of a high level of what came out of our second meeting with the Housing Study Implementation Committee. And if to kind of reset for everybody, we had a directive from City Council, actually the City Manager did, passed down that as a condition of adopting the housing market study, Council wanted to see a implementation plan, what was called a starting implementation plan. And so if you remember, our scope was to basically do that in 120 days, which will probably be winding up here in the next 30 days or so, and develop an action plan for next year, 2021. These are the short-term tactics that we would consider new, or an expansion of an existing tactic that we think we could activate in the next year. So that was our charge. That is what our charge is. And so we carried over the committee that had worked on the housing study. We added the housing providers, funders from the study, three CAC folks. And we expanded that group and have met virtually here twice in the last 30 days. Latoya, did they, was this sent to them, these next slides, or is this just, I'm just trying to figure out how much I need to read, how much would have been familiar yet to everybody. So what Bill, sent out?
So Bill, I did send the next two slides out with the agenda. I think I'm actually going to pull up the PDF files just because in this document format, I'm not sure that it's really visible. So I can pull up, let me see here.
I have them if I can share my screen, but if you got them, go ahead.
Okay, I'll just pull them up. That might be easier than trying to switch back and forth here. So give me just a second. And I'm assuming you want to start with tier A?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so as Latoya's getting that pulled up, we broke down the tactics into two tiers for next year. One was tier A. Tier A are things that are tactics that we expect to be activated next year, and we wanted to define what those steps are and who would be doing those, when they would happen, and any measurements that came out of that along the way. So the first batch or a set of five, I'm not going to read every single line here, but I'm going to hit on a couple high points. And then I also have help. Corey Wright, as you know, as you heard, is on here. Dan Warner is also on here, our planning division director. So between the three of us, we can answer, hopefully get through these and answer any questions as a result. But I will do a high level view and then just pause in between each one of these, see if anybody has any questions or comments. So the first tactic, so we broke into subgroups. Affordable Housing Trust Fund was our first tactic. This subgroup, people that were interested included folks from the Community Foundation, JUMP, Topeka Home Builders, which Ivan's on the call here. And so I was in this group. The highlight here is that I think we all agree that we needed to start with updating the actual ordinance again, because there are references to neighborhood relations. There are a review committee that needs appointments. So we really need to go back in front of the governing body to make those appointments for the review committee and update the ordinance references. So that's a minor but important step, because what we wanted to do was to then to convene the review committee. And the review committee consists of about 9 people as designated in the ordinance. And then we can convene and begin to establish the application criteria and set some of those housing targets that came out of the housing study. That is all leading up to trying to create some materials that could then be used to go out and fundraise. We need to confirm who the champion is that will help fundraise. GTP, we have listed here who will help either do that or identify those, either singular or more than a singular champion. Engage donors in the last half of next year and hope to raise funds in that quarter or two. And then hopefully by the end of the year, the last step would just to prepare either an RFP for project submissions, applications, or open it up to an application process. But first and foremost, we have to capitalize that fund is the big step. And we think that can happen by the end of next year. Reminder, the goal is the city has proposed to put in 240 for infill housing that we have funds sitting around that are unused, that those are left over from the NRP program. We also have proposed 77,000 in weatherization to help kickstart more weatherization donations into the fund. Altogether, we're hoping to get anywhere between $500,000 to $1 million in the fund by the end of next year, or commitments. Is there any questions on that? Okay, the next tactic, weatherization, I'm going to, go back. The next tactic is weatherization. Again, from a high level, we're trying to expand weatherization. We already have a couple programs that currently do that, Community Action, Habitat. We think we can infuse some city funds to help, again, leverage more private donations into a weatherization program. And so those are the steps that are covered there. There's also creating some do-it-yourself classes and kits that Habitat and Community Action have assigned themselves to do. And in the end, we want to, at the bottom there, we want to make sure that we can combine funds that are that would help the overall home. So if you're putting in weatherization, doing a weatherization upgrade from the trust fund, that we also could combine emergency repair assistance so that they have a roof that is efficient as well, for instance. So combining resources was a big part of having the most impact there. Corey, is there anything you would like to add to that? That was a pretty high level of what you guys did.
No, I think that that conversation, there was representatives from from Community Action and Habitat, and it was really about the partnerships and working together, which we already do, but we noticed a need for more collaboration with this effort. So, but yeah, I think you covered it pretty well.
Okay. So the hope here is, again, more, doing more weatherization by, and also leveraging more funds into that activity. Any questions on that? The last one on the page there is it's second chance tenancy. Okay, there is a question regarding weatherization about, can, hold on a second. Can we please discuss how the public can access it, particularly for larger projects that need done? Corey, I know with the current programs in terms of Habitat and Community Action, I don't know if you can speak to that, how they can help, how the public can access those programs. We have not, the city has not started a program, but I don't know, from an access standpoint, are these, how can the public access, are they open, first come, first serve, or how is that, do you know?
Both Habitat and Community Action have a first come first serve basis. Habitat only does homeowners. So with larger projects as described in this response, the city's potential program would not be a larger project per se because of the minimal amount of funding that we're putting into it. We would need to do smaller projects, but Community Action's program is very robust, does the blower door testing, and brings it up to Department of Energy standards. So Community Action would be the best way to go for a larger project of such.
Okay, thank you. That helps. I hope that answers the question. Yes, it does. Thank you. Okay.
This is Susan McClary, and I have a question with regard to, like, measuring the number of people that take a class. I guess that's one way of measuring some sort of success, but we know that people can be trained but don't actually apply what they've learned. So is there more efforts that can be put into looking at the matrix and trying to determine, and I'm just picking on that one, but there's several that would be similar. Are there ways that we could expand on that to be a little bit more clear as to what the return on investment really truly is on these things?
Or did you guys talk about the kind of the follow-up to the training at all?
We certainly did. So I'll talk briefly about that. So on the third line in the weatherization column, it talks about do-it-yourself kits to low-income households. The committee that was involved with these proposed steps and actions wanted to do a pre and post, maybe 6 months to a year out, kind of utility usage agreement where the homeowner would sign off that we could access their utility bills and see if there was a reduction based off of those classes. So it's very much a long-term type of analysis. So it wouldn't be immediate where we would know immediately that it's working. But in the long run, I think after a year and a half or so, we would be able to see, hopefully, that there's a reduction. Even with the fifth one on there, the certified energy efficient rental unit, we could also look at the pre and post utility bills on that one as well. So that's, you make an excellent point, and that's definitely something that we were talking about.
Okay. Thank you, Corey. So if there's nothing else on weatherization, the next tactic that there was a subgroup discussion on was second chance tenancy that came out of the housing study. The group that was part of that included Teresa Baker led that group from HCCI. The Shawnee County Landlords Association was part of that group. So Steve and Charlene, Steve Ogle, Charlene Roebuck. And they were very, and I think Community Action was as well, Tawny Stottlemyre. So they, the landlords were very interested in trying to make something like this work. They are not wanting, they want tenants that are ready, that are, you know, that may have had some missteps along the way, but believe wholeheartedly that if there is such a program that can help those situations to make them ready to be accepted as a tenant through an application, that they wanted to be all part of that. So the main thing here was to try to establish some incentives for landlords to accept what would end up being graduates of a program that helps with give folks a second chance. As some of you know, once you are denied or have a misstep again with a landlord or a rental situation, it is difficult to get accepted back. These are the sort of things that HCCI and the Landlords Association want to establish some training and then also incentivize it so that landlords can be encouraged to accept folks that come out of that second chance training. I keep saying second chance. They want to rename it to Take Two, I believe, Take Two Tenancy. And then ultimately recruit at least five landlords to accept tenants who have completed the certification program. The landlords, I think we had one landlord step up during the call, SENT, that many of you know about, the nonprofit, is more than willing to do that. And then recruit up to 10 candidates to be part of that certification program by the end of next fall. So measures there, again, are just how many people can you get placed out of that certification? How many landlords are participating? And I'm pretty happy with how that group came together and worked together to solve a common problem out there towards affordable housing. Any questions, comments on that? By anybody? Well, if not, let's go to the next page. LaToya? Oh, there's a second page to that Tier A. If you scroll down, there you go. Okay, thank you. Yeah. All right, the last two on Tier A was aging in place and rehab assistance. Aging in place was a subgroup from Habitat, Jayhawk Area Agency on Aging, and Corey, City of Topeka. Again, the main things here are to expand a current program for Habitat, where they have a home ownership of rehab for seniors. That is one of the steps by the end of next year. There are also a couple of class type steps here to implement a AARP home maintenance class for seniors. This is a new initiative that Habitat wants to take on and is willing to take on. We've also created some again, virtual presentations on long-term planning for seniors to take for educational purposes for taking care of their homes. Ultimately, we want to create more senior housing in the community. That is what one of the big findings of the study was. And to the extent that Habitat and Cornerstone are two CHOTO nonprofits, would be able to do that. That is something that they are going to explore again by the end of next year and try to actually do a development for seniors. Corey, anything there that you want to add that I may have missed?
The only thing was the second line was the resource database. So Jayhawk has a resource database that's been very utilized by the community, and they've kind of let that kind of expire, so to speak, where it's not up to date. And so they are dedicated to getting that database specifically for seniors back up into place, put on the website, and then shared on other people's websites, such as Habitat, like the City of Topeka, other places where people can utilize that. So, and the long-term planning class is something that Jayhawk says is very needed in the community. And so that was something that maybe a video or a virtual presentation of some kind would be presented. And then again, put on websites that are frequently used in the city, in particular for seniors. So it was a very good conversation, and Jayhawk Area on Aging had some really great ideas for the group. So,
yeah, I think that was a suggestion to include them, and I think Mr. Bell gets credit for that. So thank you. That was a good, excellent resource.
I used to work there.
I know.
Well, they're amazing, Michael. So thank you so much.
They are. Mm-hmm. They are.
Yep.
One note I do have about the graphic, line 2, complete resource database, and then under who, it has when instead of who.
Yes, it sure does. Corey?
So that's my fault. And the form that was created for me to enter into, when I change when, who changed at the same time. If I changed who, when changed. And so I apologize, but really that's going to be Jayhawk Area on Aging, and it would be quarter 2 of 2021. So I apologize. I was not able to get that corrected. I did not know how to do that.
It's kind of like autocorrect.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay, well, so noted. I've made that, I'll make that change. Okay, any more questions before we go on to the last tactic in Tier A? If not, we want to wrap up with rehab assistance. One note, let me tell you who, so that was Community Resource Council, Mary Thomas, Janice Watkins with Habitat, and Corey helped on that one. There was a question about rehab assistance, and we underscore this with self-help. And So there was a question if we're not doing, you know, actual rehab, more rehab, and that's a different, that'd be a different thing, probably more geared towards the trust fund. We absolutely want to be doing more physical rehab development and repairs. We have to, and to get ahead and preserve our unit inventory. So so that would be more funded through an expansion if we get trust fund capitalized. But this would be just, again, more of a self-help rehab assistance. And again, we wanted to, Habitat wants to activate a community maintenance classroom, more hands-on. Their current classes, they want to increase participation in those maintenance classes, and that's Habitat and ACCI. Habitat activating Brush with Kindness to increase accessibility to interior and exterior paint. And then lastly, develop a do-it-yourself maintenance video with assistance through the city and our video folks, that we kind of do that on property. We do that a lot with property maintenance. We could expand that to housing maintenance, do-it-yourself with Habitat. So those were some of the key steps we want to take next year, all in the first half of next year, it looks like. Does anybody have any questions on that or comments?
On rehab assistance, two things immediately come to mind. Maybe looking at restarting the old enhancement program, and then also taking advantage of public-private partnerships for material help there, Menards, Home Depot, that kind of thing.
Okay.
Sounds good to me.
I guess I would need to defer to some of you to know who would be doing and who is funding the, and what is the enhancement program. So if that's...
You want to take that, Teresa? I know the gray beard, the neighborhood gray beards here know what it was. So Teresa, I'll defer to you.
Oh, thank you. You're a gray beard too.
Yes, I am.
The funds that we didn't yet have a sort, and I think that's where the sort funding money, some of the money came from, that... When we had this program, it was a good program. It just wasn't followed through correctly, and it wasn't NIA's fault. It was also the main people up at H&D's fault for not keeping slapping our hands and watching us. But the program, if it's followed through correctly and it's watched like it's supposed to, it would work wonderful. And the funds came from the funding, I think, if I'm right, Latoria, I think you know, that we use for the SORT grant or the empowerment grant. One of our grants is the money we actually used for this enhancement program. Am I correct?
I'm sorry, Teresa. Actually, that was prior to my time. I'm not really sure.
I know one of our grants is where our funding came from. We didn't have, because we've always had empowerment, but we didn't, and there was a grant that we did have now that we didn't have then. The funds came out of that. Where the problem was, nobody watched. We kept records of who got what and what points they earned, but nobody watched us. And when things happened, there should have been somebody watching over the books from the agent H&D. We should have been able to send things to them, and they needed to check us out on our bookkeeping and what was going on. That was not checked. People were getting things that do not qualify. Things were being bought that was not qualified to buy. All sorts of craziness went on. That's what shut the program down. It was a very good program, and that program also brought people to our NIAs, and more people came because they had to come to the meetings to earn points to get these things. So it's another incentive to trying to build our NIAs again.
There were oversight issues on from all parties involved.
Right. Yeah, it wasn't just one person.
Yeah,
it was everybody's fault.
City.
Because
it
nobody was,
yeah.
Nobody actually did the job they should have done, and that's what happened.
But the program basically encouraged volunteerism, and you
yes.
could do that as a neighborhood person in a number of different ways, attending NIA meetings, doing other activities in your neighborhood. And then those hours were converted into points.
Right.
And then the points could be expended at Menards or Home Depot or something like that if you wanted to do some work on your house.
Right. There's
that
another
was
part
an
of
example.
That. There were people that came to your NIA that could earn points, but they didn't qualify for the low, because you had to be low income. They didn't qualify for that. So they could give their points to someone in need of points.
Yes, from what I remember, you could donate.
Right, you could donate
your points to someone else. And the idea was, A, to get people involved in their neighborhood, and B, then to actually provide an avenue that people could use to improve their houses.
And it also cut down on code problems.
Right, you could address those issues as well. So it was a volunteer-based program.
Out of Payless Cashways.
Okay. Yeah, they participated.
Well, okay, so it sounds like there would need to be some work done to, we certainly don't want to do anything that, like we did last time, if it got shut down. So I think there would have to be some work done towards putting a more foolproof, I guess,
sure.
program together.
Sure.
Between the neighborhood, those who are interested in the CAC, and I know city staff would definitely have to make sure, particularly if there's HUD funds involved, that this is,
oh,
yeah.
yeah. Right. That can be this, done. That
right, and
done.
I still have my records from way back then. Somebody, a Randy Speaker asked for them, and I refused to give them because I didn't want the two ladies that were running my NIA to go to jail because they were doing fraudulent things. And so I refused to give anybody anything. But I still have all of our records if somebody wants to see how the program was ran.
So someone, yeah, so I think someone needs to be accountable to take the lead in putting a proposal together and then sit down with our housing, both neighborhood community engagement and housing services to work
right.
through.
It's a really good program. It just got a little bit abused, and that's what killed it.
So who am I putting down for who is the lead? CAC?
I will do it if Mike will help me.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Because I think it's worthwhile. I think it ought to be part of what we're talking about.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Well, it's sort of sounds like a tier B and a tier A tactic, because it looks like we just need to do some planning and work on that. I think that's fine. I just want to make sure someone's taking the lead and putting that together. So we'll add something to that effect. And then we're also getting some questions about tool libraries and stuff. Somebody I know knows more than I do about the Habitat's tool bus. I believe that's what we have out there now. Did I see James? Did you answer that? Do you know more about that?
Sorry, I was trying to get my mouse over there. The last time that I had a conversation with Habitat about their tool bus program, I was informed that they had power tools, that they had mowers, weed eaters, as well as some hand tools as well on that bus. It doesn't sound like Donald thinks that's the case, so I can always contact Danielle or Nikki or someone like that from Habitat and see what their stock on the tool buses is, because I know one of the things that we've talked about in the past few months with these kinds of things is we don't want to create dual programs, You know, we don't want to already have a program and then go spend money on the same program someplace else. So I think that would, I will ask them about that.
Okay. Yeah, again, we want to, so we're not trying to identify every single thing that is out there continuing an existing effort. We want to know if there's something that can be expanded on or is new. That's, those are the things we're focusing on in this exercise or in our scope. So, but that is worth noting. So appreciate that. Okay, let's go on to tier, LaToya, if you go to tier B, we'll bring this full circle. Tier B, again, these are two things, land banking and downtown housing, that need more work in next year before they're activated. Dan Warner from planning, Linda Bryden from Sunflower Realtors, Corey, Janice Watkins from Habitat, Chris Palmer from Cornerstone, and Shawnee County Counselor's Office was part of a subgroup to discuss what would those steps look like if we wanted to eventually activate a land bank program. And so again, we're starting out with making sure we have some good benchmarking with other communities that do this already, what those funding mechanisms are. We do have a draft ordinance that is a few years old, but something that we can compare to other cities. And then come back and identify some partnerships. We're definitely going to need partnerships with the county, the realtor groups, GTP, housing providers in the city, and then really put together those drafts, draft the program goals and what we want to get out of it. These can take on very different looks depending on what you want to do with it. And so there are some good things and there are some pitfalls depending on how you set that up. So the subgroup would put that together. They would want to come back out to the community, do some community outreach and transparency as to, okay, here's what we found. Here's the direction we think Topeka could go based on who our partners are, and our resources and the needs that are out there. And then hopefully by the end of next year, have a draft ordinance resolution to adopt. So that is the land bank group. Dan, anything you want to add to that that I might have missed?
Not really, just emphasizing there's a bit of work to go here before this gets going.
Yeah, I would still think as much as we're trying to do all the work next year to get to an ordinance by the end of next year, I think that'd be I think that's a tremendous success if you can do that and have everybody kind of be lined up. But I think that obviously is the goal, and that's sort of, if it flows into another year, that's understandable. But any questions, comments on that? Okay, moving on, lastly, but not least, we have, so all the other tactics that we've discussed tonight were pretty much focused on affordable housing. This final tactic is generated more from a market rate housing standpoint, doesn't exclude any affordable housing, but downtown was identified as having a major demand for market rate units that we are not realizing now. So compared to other cities, compared to our region, we should be having a lot more of that. There's been a move back to the downtowns, across the country, and so that's kind of what's driving this tactic, is how do we just sit back and hopefully that happens, or do we become a little more proactive and try and make that happen? And so this group, which included myself and Dan, Molly, Howie from Greater Topeka Partnership, Mark Rezac with KS Commercial and Vince Fry with DTI are really some good folks charged with trying to figure out how do you get developers interested and get some traction in new housing downtown. So we have a demand for at least 900 plus units over the next 10 years. I think we are currently updating the downtown master plan, my offices, that will, I think we could set a 10-year target of at least 1,000 units when you consider the periphery of downtown and adjacent neighborhoods. I think that you could definitely, and it just sounds better. I like 1,000 works when you're going out and raising funds. But we want to also engage to see if housing, and this could flow over into affordable housing, which is interesting, whether or not housing itself could be considered part of any economic development incentives. Right now, JADO has asked the GoTopeka staff to come back to them. And that may happen by the end of this year. It was supposed to happen before, but we had something that got in the way of that. So they want to determine if housing should be included as part of economic development incentives. And that's a policy discussion that needs to be had. And if so, that could really help be one of those key layers in funding the gap of development, whether it's downtown or citywide, particularly to help our affordable count. So that's an important thing. We will ultimately what we want to get to here is a package of pitch ready properties to approach potential developers with, and that could be existing buildings, it could be a new construction site, and those are detailed a little more in the downtown master plan as to what those opportunities might show. We've laid out at least 900 units and where they could go in the next 10 years in that plan. So we are making some headway working towards this goal, but I do think we are not ready to really activate that yet. But we are, hopefully we'll get by the end of next year, potentially a RFP even to seek a new catalytic housing construction site in downtown. now all we need is a site and control of that property. No small task. But that is what that work group was going to continue to work on. GTP would be a big part of that moving forward.
I'm going to be the little negative Nancy, I guess. Here's what I hear when you mention downtown in my part of Topeka. They say they told us that we weren't going to put any more tax money or any type of money into downtown, and we're constantly feeding them funds for downtown. And I respond with, but they've earned some of the money. They said, we don't want one more penny of our tax money to go downtown. And with this just being labeled downtown housing, if I would take this to my NIA right now, I wouldn't even be able to first getting the word down out of my mouth, I would be screamed at. So, you know, I see that you're sectioning all of downtown, but and you're wanting to build downtown. That's awesome. But you got to remember, you've had units downtown before, and now they're into housing and scary places to go. As a matter of fact, they were just the Green Monster was just sold to somebody private, and they gave it a little paint job and that, and you haven't heard as much. But that used to be a very expensive place to live. It had shops below where they could shop and all that, and that went to the wayside. So I don't, when we're thinking about if we do anything downtown, you've got to remember, we've had this once. but it went to the wayside, and I don't want to spend money out there and have to listen to the people in my neighborhood scream because we once again put taxpayers' money downtown and it falls apart like it did before. And that's all I got to say.
All right. Thanks, Teresa. I guess I'll just add that. So there are a number of incentives already in place that have created housing, new housing downtown. Assumption Catholic School, St. Joseph's Catholic School, all have been renovated. The 101 North Kansas have been renovated. There are other lofts that have been done. These have all happened without direct tax dollars going to them other than the incentives that have already been in place, such as the Neighborhood Revitalization Program. There are historic tax credits for the state. There are low-income housing tax credits through the state. There is a TIF district that the governing body approved that can go towards this type of thing. So I'm not sure there's anything more incentive-wise that can be done here other than making people aware that these opportunities exist and quite honestly, we are underperforming for downtown for a city our size, and it represents the largest single most opportunity to increase our housing growth that we have in the city.
Here's something else I want to say to you. Maybe it might. This will just sound a little better. It doesn't mean it's going to change anything. If you would put downtown area housing, because here's where I think you guys are missing the whole ball. Monroe area. You took part of Monroe when you made downtown NIA. You need to do something with Monroe. It is falling apart, connected to your downtown. It's a black eye to the downtown where you don't want to do anything around the area downtown. So you need to also look at that.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
One of the things I had brought up, not to interrupt, Bill, I'm sorry, just real quickly. When you talked about the neighborhoods adjacent to downtown, downtown is kind of unique in one way because it is completely surrounded by NIAs. And there also is a downtown NIA. And so while I understand what you're talking about mainly involves market rate housing, and that's fine, but there's a chance then for whatever improvements are going on downtown for those things to ripple out into those adjacent neighborhoods to downtown. You and I and Dan talked about, for example, the Kaysen Building at 6th and Topeka. We talked about the old Van Buren School down off of 17th and Van Buren in Monroe. And we also talked about East Topeka Junior High, though in East Topeka South. So there are opportunities. Those just immediately come to mind. But those could be affordable housing things that could be done that would then ripple from what's going on downtown.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, you're right. We did talk about that, and if I did not say that enough about that in our overview here, then my bad. I thought I talked about the fringe being included when we went to 1,000 units, because what about rippling in as well as rippling out? So we absolutely want to see the Kaysen Building fortified at 6th and Topeka, because I think that helps downtown as much as it helps Old Town. So totally agree. And I'll take Teresa. If it helps, I will add downtown area housing. That's what we're talking about. So I think that's good. I think when we try and expand on these steps here, we're going to try and put, I guess, some document together. I don't know how much more meat we're going to put on this. But hopefully that will be reflected that it includes adjacent neighborhoods as well.
Thank you.
Okay, those are the steps I wanted to get in front of you guys tonight and have you give some feedback. We are certainly open. If other things come up that you see or would want to have be part of this, please let me, Dan, or Corey know. We will have one more meeting with our large group, either at the end of the month or the beginning of November, which means I'll try to come back then one more time if you'll have me if you're meeting in November, and hopefully maybe even do it. We would send something out so you guys can look at and review and before the meeting. That is my intent. So thank you for everything, and just give me some time tonight to walk through these. Corey or Dan, anything else?
No, but thank you, Bill.
Yep.
Thank you, guys. You're too kind.
I can be sometimes.
She can. She really can.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you, guys.
Everybody, I'm back. I'm sorry, I got booted there for about 2 or 3 minutes, so I didn't quite catch the end of what Michael and Teresa and Bill were talking about, but hopefully a replay or have somebody fill me in on something.
We'll talk.
So it looks like we're on to some of the sort things that are going on. We went and graded the sort applications. Was it last night? Yeah, it was last night. And we only received 6 out of 14 responses from the eligible CAC members, and we need at least 7. So we have 2 options. One would be to vote to proceed with the recommendation of the 6 responses received. Teresa?
Yes, I will accept it if everybody else will accept it, because we need to get on with the SWORT grant, and I would really like to go on, because I figured, I was surprised we even got 6 this time.
I was going to say, I have the stuff to fill out another one if you need a 7th person. I went to go do it last night, and apparently I was a little after you closed the surveys. I can do that first thing in the morning.
Okay. Well, then, in that case, we can give you guys until Friday at noon, and then we'll have to have a special follow-up meeting Monday, October 12th at 6 p.m. So, here's the question: Do we want to vote with what we have here, even though we still don't have a quorum, and tell them that, hey, the 6 people that graded are okay, or do we want to try to get the 7 and then have a special meeting on Monday at 6 p.m. about the sort again? Really up
here,
to you guys.
I have an answer, and let me do it because I'm Negative Nancy and everybody hates me anyway. So here's the deal. We had an extension on getting the sort grant in. We had plenty of time to get the sort grant in. So they should go with the 6 that did it like they were supposed to do it. And I'm sorry to penalize anybody, but that was the rules. Now, I understand we don't have a quorum, but they were sent out to people to grade on these sort grant. Am I correct? So people have already graded these sort grants. And we've already scheduled this. And like I said, we had a deadline, and the deadline was passed. So if it's in agreement with everybody that is there tonight, I would, as long as everybody's in agreement, I don't see any problem. But like I say, I'm sorry. We've had an extended deadline on the sort. They gave it to us. It was a long time, and anybody should had the deadline to hand their sort grant in by that time. So that is the deadline that was met, because that was the second deadline. I don't want to put.
Yes. Teresa, this isn't about sort grant application.
What is it about them?
It's about the people. The four. There was 14 NIAs that were eligible to grade those.
Oh, to grade them! I'm so sorry. It's the ex-doing negative fancy. If that's what you want to do, I take it and send them all back in.
We only had six out of the 14 NIAs that could grade these actually turn them in. We needed seven.
Okay, we need to wait then. And I apologize for being a little negative Nancy again. But yeah, we need to wait for the seventh one. Is that what everybody's in agreement with?
No.
I was going to say, Chesney Park can have their grading in by tomorrow morning. I get off at 5 in the morning and we'll have it first thing.
Yeah. Plus, I sent an email to James and to LaToya about another person. So there's that option as well.
James?
Yes.
I believe we were told that if we didn't receive the minimum number, that H&D would then make the selections.
Monique or LaToya, would one of you like to handle that?
Yeah, because I have no clue.
Sure. I had the opportunity to have a discussion with the city manager via email today. And city manager Trout, I believe he's on the phone with us. Would you like to respond to that?
You bet. I'd be happy to. I believe that this issue is, to be graded by the community and make those decisions. And any time that we can allow what was originally set up to be evaluated by their peers in this case instead of by staff should be done. And with being at six and only one short of what your goal was, that definitely wanted to see if a seventh could be achieved. And even at that, I really think that six is a pretty good number, and that but you've already heard commitment from Chesley Park to get that done, so I think you're going to get your seven, and I just really think that having you all make the decision recommendation is the right place for the decision to be made. So I believe that it should happen with you guys and let your ratings instead of staff happen.
Okay, so we were drawing that, but the goal should have been 14, not seven.
Sure, I agree with you, Ivan. I think that was Ivan. That is the ultimate goal. But sometimes with participation levels, I think with the idea of seven being half of the group making input is enough to feel like you would not have one group of two or three people deciding things, and that at least you had a better cross section of the decision makers. So yes, definitely would have been better if we could have had 14. But
understood. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So with all of that being said, and also realizing that we don't have a quorum tonight, I am going to bring this to a vote, because we have to bring this to a vote. So all in favor of option one, which is proceed with the six graders graded, say aye.
Aye.
I hear zero ayes.
Aye.
Is Don Fortin still on the call?
Who?
Don Fortin.
I don't know.
Can you tell me, James? I don't know.
Who's all on the call?
On, give me a second.
I'm here.
You still there?
Yep.
Okay. The reason I ask is that he's our regular rep, but if he's not on the call, then I can vote.
I don't think so.
Yeah, Don's there.
Okay.
Teresa says yes.
Okay, so I've heard two ayes for that. Now we haven't even got to option two yet.
Jay,
yes. Yes.
And I would like to have that extra person weigh in on it so we have at least our seven.
Okay. So on option one, I heard two yay. Now on option two, to reopen additional responses by Friday, October 9th at 12 p.m., and have a follow-up special CAC Zoom meeting Monday, October 12th at 6 p.m. That is option two. All in favor of option two, say aye. Aye?
Aye.
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 I think I heard four voices there. Was there a fifth at the end?
Yeah, aye.
Aye.
Okay, so I would say option number two passes 5-2 over option one. Does anybody have any?
Yeah, just a point of clarification. So that meeting will be specifically called for that purpose and only that purpose.
That purpose, only that purpose.
Okay. Because there's another meeting that some of the people on the CAC also have at 6 p.m. on Monday. But I think we can probably move
Monday.
That back to 7 because your meeting at 6 really shouldn't take all that long.
No, because my meeting starts at 7 on Monday.
Okay.
It starts when?
At 7 o'clock on Monday evening. That's my NIA meeting. I have a meeting.
Well, could we, LaToya or Monique or anyone, could we move this meeting to 5:30 p.m.? That way it doesn't interfere with 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock NIA meetings?
Absolutely.
So would 5? Anybody? Is there anybody that doesn't like the idea of 5:30 on Monday?
I work till 5:30. This is Margo. I'll be unable to do that. So I don't know what that does for your quorum.
Okay. That's all right, but we do need everybody. We do need everybody else in on it.
Mr. Chair, go ahead, Ivan.
James, what is the action item for that meeting? What is the vote to be for?
The it will be to review whomever turns in the final scorecards. And then add that to the totals that have already been established from the six others that have already graded. And if I misspoke about anything, LaToya or Monique, please let me know.
I don't understand how that requires a vote of the CAC to tally those responses. And I'm still questioning for almost over a year now who decides whether we have a quorum or not. No, never mind.
James, do we really need to meet if we have seven? I mean, is that something that, I mean, can Monique or LaToya comment on that? Are we needing that?
I mean, I'll be honest with you. I was one of the graders last time. I don't have any problem going in on Monday and grading the last one, but I do need somebody to grade it with me if we can do it that way.
So ultimately then a recommendation will be made by the CAC as a result of this process about which NIA should be designated as a 2021 SORT neighborhood.
Yes, sir.
That is the ultimate. Okay.
That is exactly what we are talking about.
Okay. Here's my question. since they already, because we have the Zoom meeting and all the voting is going to be already scored in office, as I understand, and then we're just going to be told at the meeting how it was scored. Am I correct?
So I'm going to speak to that to clarify. I will have to get back with my two tally volunteers. So that was Mr. Prout and Mrs. McClelland. And basically we will have to add the new scores to the responses that have already been received. And then that will be presented at the meeting on Monday.
In the meeting on Monday, is it going to tell the person if they got it, that NIA, if they received it or not?
Yes, that will be the meeting that will say this is basically shows the totals for all of the NIAs that applied for SORT and which NIA will be selected for the 2021 SORT neighborhood.
So that's what the meeting is strictly for, us to get online so you can tell me the highest score of and list the people that are getting it, that applied, and what their scores were, and then just tell them that this is the highest score, so this is who gets it. And that basically runs it down. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Well, that shouldn't take all that long.
Exactly. And here's... I wish you could just send it in a email. I mean, it's already will be a done deal by the time the meeting gets called. And if everybody can't come to the meeting, why do we have to have so many people for you to tell us that? That's my question. Why do we have to have so many people be on the Zoom conference call for you to tell us who the person is that gets it? No. This cannot be sent to all NIAs saying this is what the score was, this is who entered, and this is who received.
I would defer that to the CAC to take a vote on that. If that is how you would like the outcome to be presented, we can certainly do that.
All in favor of receiving an email notification instead of having a special meeting on Monday for the SORT grant winner, say aye.
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 Aye. We're all aye in it.
All right, then we will receive an email.
Thank you, James.
I have a question. So are we still going to try to get more than the 7? In other words, are you still going to open it up until Friday and still try to wrangle around a few more people than just the one who
committed
to it tonight? Okay.
Yes, we actually have two commitments. We have one from Donald and one from, I can't find your name, Chesney Park. Okay, thank you. So there should be at least two more that come in. Hopefully somebody else decides this meeting online tomorrow and goes, oh no, I forgot to do it. And we can get hopefully all 14 NIAs. I'd be completely okay with that. But as long as we have our 7 plus, we're good.
That'll work.
James, I'm a little concerned about the vote that was just taken, and this is why I'm a little concerned about it. Basically, what the body decided to do was to abdicate its vote on this. There won't be an official at a CAC vote on what it recommends. And I understand that that's pro forma, basically, but what we're saying is that, HND is going to tell us how the score turned out, and that's the end of the discussion. And I'm not sure that's the kind of precedent that this body wants to set.
But isn't that basically what they're going to do anyway in the Monday meeting? They're basically just going to tell you this is the score, this is who entered, and this is who won, and that's it? Because that's all the call for.
Well, what is...
Also, we're not advocating our vote. We have the right to survey and score them if we weren't one of the advocating bodies.
Yeah, because we're not voting on anything. It'll be a done deal. There should have been a done deal tonight. Well, they're just adding their scores to what's already there.
But there won't be a CAC vote attached to it.
We can, but Michael, can't we, in the email, can't we have the option to say yay or nay, and then LaToya can tabulate that and give us the result?
perhaps.
And I think
I just don't think it's a good idea for us to be giving up a vote.
Well, I think we can still vote by email, and I think that might be the easiest with all of us, as opposed to trying to schedule another Zoom meeting, you know, next Monday.
Where's the votes coming from? Because I thought, I'm not understanding our voting thing. So I don't want to give anybody's votes away, because I didn't think we're voting, because I wasn't, you know, that's what they're sending the application out for everybody's score to send in to add to who already's done their job, and they're just adding up the scores, and that's what they're telling you. Where's the voting coming in?
Teresa, can I? I'm going to interject here.
Yeah, go ahead, because I'm confused.
I think, you know, part of the thing is that, yes, you score, and I think it's really a vote to say that you follow the process and that this is the organization that you feel should receive it. In other words, it's more of an affirmation of vote that you have indeed followed your process and this is your CAC's recommendation.
Right, and I can't vote because I'm one of them that sent one of the SORT grant applications in.
Right. Right now, we have it on our agenda to have this go before the governing body on the November 10th. I believe we can even look at, I don't know for sure, I may be speaking out of turn, but we could wait till the 17th, and then you guys could actually do your official vote at your November meeting so that, you know, tally is the tally, and we can move forward with placing it on the agenda. But you could do your official vote in November at your meeting. Hopefully you get a quorum then and accomplish the same thing. I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal to push it off 1 week to allow you to do that.
It's just hard on the people that's done the applications. I've been a bundle of nerves today. I was hoping that we could have had our answer tonight. But
yeah.
I'm just an impatient person, and I apologize for that. It's going to drive me nuts until we get.
Hey, I've waited for grants in my life, and you're right. You want to know when you want to.
Exactly, it's driving me crazy.
I think the bottom line is you by Friday, and then back to Monday when the scores are tallied, depending on who submits by the new deadline. Whoever, you'll know that you were the selected person.
Okay.
You just wouldn't have the official vote to confirm.
All right. So are there one, here's my question. So are we needing to make the phone call so we won't do it through an email, or we need to make the phone call to people?
Well, I think, to Michael Bell's statement, I think that eventually you do need to make a vote from the CAC saying so that it's in the minutes that it was selected. This was, even though the numbers tell the truth as to who's selected, it really is a confirmation vote by that, because that's what the governing body is going to ask. Did the CAC do this?
Yeah, and I understand. I didn't mean to cut you off. So let's go ahead and have our thing at 5:30, 5:45, however it is that we want to do. I need to get this over with. I can't. It's driving me crazy.
Well, Teresa, you know, and I'll get some gin to you to help you get through, but I think, at least the way I'm looking at this, is the solution that the city manager has proposed, I think, works. You can do this.
I mean, I'm fine. I'll do with anybody.
At the November 4th CAC meeting.
Okay.
And still be under the deadline.
Right. Well, see, I just held I was holding a special meeting Monday so we could tell whether or not my NIA, if we received it or if we didn't receive it, so we could had a plan to go on from there. I don't know what to tell them. I don't know how we're going to, you know, because my plan will be different one way or the other. It makes a big difference. So I'm basically not going to have much at my meeting then.
If we go along with what the city manager has suggested, you'll know on November 4th.
Yeah, you should be able to get an email that says this is the scores, who was selected, and you'll know that you were selected.
Okay. I'm willing to do whatever else everybody else wants to do. I mean, it's what is the best way to do it? That's the way I want to do it.
What if we compromise and get the email and then do the official vote at the November meeting? So you have your meeting and information that you need, and we can get the official vote in the next CAC meeting.
It's however you guys want to do it. I'll go along with however you guys want to do it.
This is Deborah, and I agreed to having the official vote at our November 4th meeting and sending an email to the winner of the slow grant prior to that.
Is that what you want, Mike?
Yeah, that'll work.
Okay, well, then there you go.
I just really don't, you know, I don't want to give up a vote. Even if it appears to be pro forma,
we fight hard.
That's just
for
a dangerous precedent to set.
So, do we need to bring up a vote to change our vote then? Because we did already vote for that.
Well, a Robert's rule says I guess somebody on the prevailing side needs to offer a motion to reconsider. Is that how that works?
Mike, why don't you offer it? I can't. I really can't because I shouldn't be voting on this at all. Really, right. I shouldn't.
But this is Deborah.
I voted for the previous way, and I was the one who suggested the compromise. So I guess that counts as a motion.
That could be your motion to reconsider.
Motion I second it.
There you go. Does everybody say aye?
Aye.
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 Now, it's my understanding, and I'm a little rusty on Robert's Rules of Order, but now we're back to deciding what we want to do, and it would be appropriate now to discuss voting at the November 4th meeting.
Yes, bring it up that way.
So if that somebody way wants to make that motion.
I make the motion to vote on November the 14th. This is Deborah.
I second
November,
it.
November 4th.
And it's been seconded by who?
Courtney from
Chesney
Park.
There you go.
Okay. Now everybody vote.
All in favor say aye.
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 It's an aye.
All opposed say aye. Motion passes.
Awesome.
All right. So we are done with that.
Good meeting.
Let's move on to our next subject matter.
Hey, can I ask for an email to be sent to everybody to tell everybody exactly what we just did so we won't forget? That it'll be in black and white.
Great idea.
I don't think that's too much to ask.
Thank you.
All right. So we have definitely spent our 10 minutes on this one. So let's move on to our next subject, please and thank you.
So James, just as the other two items actually pertain to whether or not a decision was made tonight, they pertain to the sort. Those items will now be moved to the November 4th meeting.
Okay.
I'm making a motion that we adjourn.
I second.
There's actually another item on the agenda. I don't
not
know.
On mine. Does adjournment.
The agenda was added late this afternoon.
Oh, well, I didn't get that one. Go for
okay.
it.
So this is going to be a James and Michael collaboration special. Okay, Michael?
Right.
I'm kind of tired of hearing my own voice, and I'm sure you guys are tired of hearing it, too. So, I'm just going to give a brief introduction, and then Michael, I'm going to let you take over. Okay. So this is the Neighborhood Initiatives Work Group report. This is a group that's been working together for a little bit. Some of us longer than others. I've been involved for about 3 weeks. I think, Michael, you guys started about 9 weeks ago or so.
On August 10th.
Okay.
We've had nine meetings.
The members currently are Councilperson Hiller, Michael, Ann Marshall from Chesney Park, Michelle McCaffrey from North Topeka West, Susan from Valley Park, Teresa from North Topeka West, myself, Mike, I don't want to butcher this name.
I don't know how to pronounce
it. Betafor, from Old Town, Kimberly Thompson from Central Park, and Eric from Central Park. So with that, I just want to say there are some CAC members on this, and we would like more of you to help with this, because this really is about all of us in our neighborhood. So with that, I'm going to let Michael take it away.
Yeah, what happened was we had our first meeting on August 10th of this year, and two city council members, including Karen Hiller, asked a group of NIA leaders to meet to discuss the city's affordable housing study and its implementation, as well as the HUD-funded con plan, after both have been put on hold for 30 days. And those discussions would be from the viewpoint of those who actually represent low to moderate income people and neighborhoods. And a number of those NIA volunteers are CAC members or alternates. They are among you and support you. And we decided to call ourselves the Neighborhood Initiatives Work Group. And so the mission of the group is genuine neighborhood input and collaboration with the city's elected and appointed officials, not tangentially being included in decisions they make that directly affect us, and to provide a first step in engaging all neighborhoods and anyone who wants to be involved. And so there's some information. I'm not sure if James has that ready to be distributed or posted. We can get the PDF out to people after the meeting that goes into greater detail about some of the work of the work group. We've met every week since August 10th. So the group of people that James identified are taking this very seriously. And again, we're coming at this standpoint not necessarily from as developers and people like that, but as low to moderate income advocates. That's it.
Thank you, Michael. with that, there was somebody made a motion earlier.
I did.
It sounded real good.
Teresa made a motion and it was seconded by somebody.
Chesney Park seconded it.
Let's bow on to a vote. All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed?
Good night, right. Everybody.
Teresa, adios. Let me know later when I can drop off the gin.
I will need it really soon. thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, James.
Thank you, guys. Have a good evening.
Thank you all. Bye-bye.